This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with SG2 experts and industry thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
Hi, SG2 Perspectives listeners. We are trying something fun and maybe a little dangerous. On May 22nd, we're hosting a live podcast where you can join us for the recording of an episode. Our relationship right now is a little one-sided and we want to meet you. So we'll put you in my chair. You can ask us questions, share your insights, or just heckle us. There's more information in the show notes, but you do need to register so you can get a link to attend. Hope to see you there.
Controlling costs is going to be key, but really thinking about the entire system of care. And we've had members do this, say, okay, we have a system of care that was built for a population 30, 40 years ago that was much more robust, maybe younger, less needy. And that just doesn't reflect all the assets, the bricks and mortar that we have in place today. And it's time to right-size that.
Welcome to SG2 Perspectives. My name is Jamie Zage, and I'm your host for this episode. At SG2, we continue to monitor where margins are, where financial resiliency is with all of our member clients across the country. And we follow the Kaufman Hall flash reports. And we know that everybody as a nation, we're getting back to those positive margins, although small. We also know that it's highly variable across the country and that it really depends on what's happening at the local level as to whether or not you as an organization and your organization is actually seeing that recovery at the same level, or maybe better, maybe a lot worse. I'm here with my colleagues, Brian Esser, Shushma Nara, and Ryota Tirada, who have developed our Economic Index 2.0 as a way to help organizations anticipate where the financial headwinds and tailwinds are in the coming years. Welcome, team.
Thanks, Jamie. Thanks for having us.
You're welcome. Why don't we start with an overview of the Economic Index and those four key domains, Brian?
The Economic Index is a brainchild here between Sushma, Ryota, and myself. It really emerged fall of last year when we were trying to understand the market dynamics impacting providers and how does the environment you're working in allow faster or maybe slower recovery on a financial basis. So often organizations are focused inward, thinking about revenue quality, staffing, supply costs, inflationary dynamics, access, all of that critically important and something that SG2 has weighed in on for decades now. But we also want to say, what are those outside factors? What are things that maybe not within the four walls or within your system of care that will have a commensurate impact on you as an organization, your ability to get back to stability or above and beyond and really see a margin improvement within the next 12 to 18 months? So this idea of the Economic Index was born, and Sushma and Ryota really took it to the next level beyond our 1.0 version that was published in the fall into this 2.0 version, where we began to get even more defined across four major categories or domains. That we're calling them, that roll up ultimately into an overall index. And the goal of this is to forecast where will the market that you're operating in be in 5 years. And it could be your current market, it could be markets that you're thinking about entering, markets that on a merger and acquisition basis might be within play. Or if you're a life science or industry type organization, or even an architectural firm, supporting providers, other types of industries entering and interacting with the healthcare ecosystem, where are those providers going to be and how do you interact with them and how should you be thinking about moving forward. So that was the genesis of where this came. The four domains that we've introduced that are rolling up into this overall target are one, demographics, pure and raw population shifts and growth or shrinkage across the market. Secondarily is consolidation dynamics. What's going on across the market as far as consolidation? What's impacting organizations in that manner? Coverage, thinking about the payer lens from the governmental and the commercial side, but also factoring in value-based care type initiatives. And then lastly, and the one that I find most interesting is market vitality, which is a catch-all for a lot of unique metrics that we haven't worked with in the past, but bring a whole different lens to how we view markets moving forward.
That's great. Underneath those domains are a lot of different components. And those are a lot of the signals that organizations could look for to anticipate how a market might be shifting. What are some of those key signals within those domains?
The Economic Index, it's forward-looking, considering external pressures affecting the market over the next 5 years. There are key metrics that we leverage that are dynamic in nature. For example, under the consolidation domain, we expect to see some markets consolidate further as different health systems merge or acquire distressed competitors. Despite an already high level of payer concentration levels, we continue to see attempts for further consolidation by major players, including the now discontinued merger proposed at the end of the year between Cigna and Humana, and then the subsequent announcement of HCSC's acquisition of Cigna Canada's Medicare Advantage business earlier this year. Beyond consolidation, we always have to keep an eye on state and federal level policy decisions that may greatly impact coverage. Starting with Medicaid, where the end of the public health emergency resulted in nearly 17 million disenrolled so far, while under the current administration, we've simultaneously also seen substantial gains in commercial coverage insurance under the ACA plans. And the wild card that I'm tracking is, will legislators step in to lower or even further accelerate the shift towards Medicare Advantage? Of course, we'll do our best to incorporate the impact of these changes in future updates. But Sushma, is there anything else that comes to mind thinking about the dynamic metrics?
In the market vitality domain specifically, something that comes to mind is local economic changes to housing affordability. The higher the cost of housing, it applies pressure on the ability to secure labor needs and attract patients. And I call out Miami here because it's a great example. From the outside, they have a very favorable demographic growth and a booming economy, but their housing is so unaffordable that providers are really being challenged on these labor fronts.
Of these four domains, which ones can our provider clients most easily influence? Is there something about it's more about reacting to them?
The consolidation domain contains elements that would be most easily influenced by providers. Things like provider consolidation and commercial rates are within their span of control. Hospitals and health systems drive a significant portion of their local economies. GDP growth, which is located in the market vitality domain, is also within their scope. In contrast, the demographic domain, which is really only measuring population change and enrollment shifts in the coverage domain, are most often subject to their reaction rather than within their control.
One area that we also have factored into this market vitality element is portions of the Vizient Vulnerability Index, where we're thinking about on an economic or social determinant of health facet, will that apply pressure on the population and downward onto the providers operating in that market? Providers may not influence that directly. The ability to become a hub and really streamline efforts like transportation or food pantries, thinking about, I've heard organizations say, hey, maybe our clinically integrated network or ACO should be more than just us as providers. Maybe there's other facets of the community that can be blended in to really get to this idea of pure population health, push back on some of these vulnerabilities in the market, thus generating more wellness across the entire population, kickstarting certain areas in employment or commercial activity that will bring a little bit of vitality back to markets that might be degrading to some degree. So there may not be direct ties that they can influence, at least in off the get, but there's definitely areas that providers influence, just being the largest employer in the town, being impacting the health of the community. All of that is important to consider.
Absolutely. How are healthcare leaders using the economic index to make decisions and develop or redevelop or refine their financial strategy?
We position the economic index to serve as a future-focused market assessment to be primarily used in tandem with the organizational financial health to really drive their strategic decision-making. A few examples of the archetypes, one of them being if the organizational financial health is in a strong position coupled with a strengthening market, we characterize this as a perform and innovate market. So these organizations are in a highly growing market demographically with favorable payer mix. However, this might make them very competitive. However, this might make them subject to high competition, which is why we suggest organizations that fall into a perform and innovate category to really double down on capacity optimization, specifically using customer segmentation techniques to build loyalty. And a great example of this is a system in Florida that fell into a highly performing category, and they incurred losses through contract labor expense in order to meet and grow their capacity. On the other end of the spectrum, in a deteriorating market coupled with weak organizational finances, we characterize this archetype to be a rationalize and partner. And these types of systems sit in markets with little demographic growth, perhaps stagnant economic environments, and long-standing financial challenges. And for these systems, we prioritize cost management. For example, they might need to trim service offerings in order to reduce labor expense, but cost cutting will really help position them favorably as well if they're looking to be absorbed by another health system.
Sushma, would it be fair to say when it's really the conjunction of both the financial health of the organization and the external pressures of the economic index that puts you in the quadrant that's most appropriate for you? That's really important to emphasize here because especially as you're thinking about the free levers that are available for members, right? They're controlling costs, as Sushma mentioned, or optimizing capacity or improving revenue quality. These are levers are going to be available to every provider. The question is going to be, which one do you need to pull faster or in the prioritization, right? Which one do you have to pull first, as well as which one can you pull harder. While it'd be really nice for all of us to be in that position where our costs are in order and we can focus on the big project of transforming healthcare and optimizing capacity in that other end of that quadrant, is going to be a reality for a lot of our members. And recognizing that's where you're at today is going to be an important assessment for determining what's the right levers to pull and what order to do them. Brian, any other thoughts that you think about the member conversations you've been having?
The forward-looking nature of the index is really geared to help you anticipate as a provider, where's the market going? So if you're in a strong market today, but it's aging, and you realize in 5 years out, majority of our payer mix, 50, 60% or more, is going to be governmental, Medicare and Medicaid. And within that book of business, the revenue quality dynamic is going to shift from fee-for-service oriented towards value-based care. And maybe we haven't stretched those value-based care muscles enough or built the infrastructure to really handle that type of risk and orientation to generating revenue that we should have, but gives you a bit of headway or at least line of sight to saying, okay, when is the right time to kickstart certain strategies that may have been on the back burner to date versus that might be challenged. Demographics, you're just losing population, not a lot of commercial dynamics going on there. Maybe housing is an issue, all of that factoring in, and it's just a very challenging geography. Controlling costs is going to be key, but really thinking about the entire system of care. And we've had members do this, say, okay, we have a system of care that was built for a population 30, 40 years ago that was much more robust, younger, less needy. And that just doesn't reflect all the assets, the bricks and mortar that we have in place today. And it's time to right-size that. And those are tough decisions. We're pulling things out of markets that used to be vibrant that may not be so anymore. I just need a certain set of services that weren't really favorable back 20, 30 years ago. So it's these sort of tougher decisions that if we can look forward from the market angle, at least gives us more rationale and a better line of sight.
That's really powerful thinking. This is going to be an amazing tool for our provider clients. I'm intrigued by the concept, though, of understanding the market has broader implications for others that we work with in the healthcare space, life sciences, the suppliers, the pharmaceutical companies. How are they looking at using something like the economic index?
It was actually an interesting discussion with an architecture firm who supports providers and saying, where is a lot of the growth going to be? At least where is the market favorability likely that we should be thinking about? Here's where the capital ultimately is going to be spent by providers. New towers, new medical office buildings, you name it. Thinking about how do we redesign portfolios there, but also reacting to members who are saying we can't afford to the degree we had in the past capital deployment on buildings, helping them think through what is the most efficient space in order to serve the population in the best manner possible. Thinking about that from maybe an architectural or building type dynamic. How do we monitor the growth of populations, but where will those subacute needs across disease patterns look like and which providers are going to be more exposed? How do we message if it's going to be a provider that's dealing with Medicare age folks versus maybe a more commercially oriented population? Maybe their payment isn't fee for service. Maybe it's now value-based care. How do we message how to operate within that environment and continue to win and succeed operationally? So it could be used across the spectrum, but I don't know. Sushma, Ryota, thoughts on that?
So Brian, when we think about the needs of some of our other customers for life sciences, they're really trying to understand their customers, provider side. As they're segmenting what might resonate for them, one area is, as we're thinking about that transition to value-based care, of course, is that there are partnership opportunities that meet the needs of the providers that go beyond just pricing. It's going to be, what can we do to better enable tracking of patients? What can we do to better support their recovery or maybe a surgical device implant? But are they ready for that? Are they ready for that message? Or are they going to be in that mindset is a question that we're hoping we might be able to help them. Because as you're looking at those four archetypes that Sushma was mentioning, if they're stuck in the lower left quadrant where they're thinking about cost reduction, they're just not ready to take on a bold partnership. On the other side, you might be targeting thinking about the markets where they're strengthening and they're in good financial health as a starting point. They are going to probably be more receptive to thinking about those more bolder, longer term partnerships that we're seeing emerge more and more every year. Sushma, anything else you'd add?
I agree with you, Ryota. It really helps life sciences companies position their approach to deliver the most value to a provider system, dependent on their current positioning.
I would definitely agree with that sentiment as well. Increasingly, we're seeing our life sciences and non-provider members of the healthcare ecosystem look to lean in and be better partners. And part of it is, how do we find the customers that are going to most resonate with us? But for those that are in that domain that are going to be more focused on cost containment, it might be more of a fee-for-service transactional partnership. But understanding what that means in terms of their ability to take on higher-priced products versus lower-priced products, you've got to look at it at the total cost of care component. And that's something that I know increasingly that our CDB data has been able to do for some products on the marketplace as well. lots of great ways that the economic index could come in and support some of those non-providers as well. Want to shift a little bit further out and think just generally about financial resiliencies in the context of the economic index, but also all the things that have been going on. I'd love to get your bold predictions for what we see in the next 1 to 2 years that's going to be impacting financial resiliency for our health system providers.
This is something that we're already seeing happening. Greater divergence between systems that are performing well and those that are not, particularly in strengthening markets. In the markets where we've labeled them as strengthening markets, we're going to see the leaders truly take advantage of the position they're in, that they've moved beyond controlling costs, they've moved beyond just improving revenue quality to truly transforming their healthcare delivery. That's going to start paying dividends down the line. And that's going to start a virtuous cycle that is going to make it harder and harder for their competitors to catch up if they didn't make the same bets. That's my bold prediction.
I like it. That's fantastic. And Jamie, in my mind, it's really about intentionality and providers being very specific of which strategies they deploy and when. And those that do that well, succeeding in any market environment, and those that do it poorly, often failing or falling behind equally any market environment. And I say that having seen organizations you think would be riding a very large wave based on where they're sitting, the demographics, the payer mix, et cetera, but have for some reason faltered versus some that are sitting in markets that I was shocked, just given what I perceived the market to look like, throwing off fantastic margins and being extremely strong financially. And it really becomes down to the leadership team and the strategy team and saying, what do we know? How do we perceive the market that we're operating in? And how does that drive the discussions and then ultimately the strategies we deploy? That's going to separate the winners from the losers.
Another thing I wanted to add on here is while identifying factors that contribute negatively to market economic index may not be the sexiest topic, this is something that life sciences should pay attention to because they may be able to play an outsized role in impacting that in the future. Increasingly, systems and policymakers are requiring local sourcing, for example, in order to better support small businesses, minority-owned businesses that are often in communities with high economic vulnerability. And these partnerships and investments in turn can help turn around the trajectory of our market. Certainly not a short-term solution, but those type of investments and plays are going to have an impact in the next update, hopefully, for economic index.
We've got some great insights from our experts, Sushma, Brian, and Ryota. Thank you so much for sharing about the new Economic Index 2.0 with our listeners today. It's something that we're going to continue to see evolve. As you guys, with your bold predictions, have suggested, we're going to see more diligence and more precision around financial strategy, just like we do with strategic planning for growth overall. Thank you all for joining me today. And thank you to our listeners on SG2 Perspectives.
Thanks so much for listening to SG2 Perspectives. As always, I really value your feedback, input, comments, or ideas for episodes, and you can reach us at sg2perspectives@sg2.com. Additionally, I recommend that you check out some of the other Vizient podcasts, which cover a range of clinical and operational areas. Those can all be found at vizientinc.com/podcasts.